Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 22, Krishna Steals the Gopis' Garments. Today we're reading text number 13 through 17. Word meanings for 13. Evam thus, Bruvati speaking. Govinde, Lord Govinda, Narmana, by his joking words, Akshipta, agitated, Chetasaha, their minds, Akanta, up to their necks. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's some different feasts that are described, and it says the devotees ate Akanta, up to their necks. Magna, submerged, Sita, or Shita, cold, Uday, in the water, Vepamanaha, shivering, Tam, to him, Abruvan, they spoke. Evam Bruvati Govinde, Narmanakshipta Chetasaha, Akanta Magnas Shitode, Vepamanas tamabruvan, Evam bruvati govinde, Narmanakshipta chetasaha, Akanta magnashitode, Vepamanas tamabruvan, Evam bruvati govinde, Narmanakshita chetasaha, Akanta magnashitode, Vepamanastam abruvan. Ladies. Thank you. Translation. As Sri Govinda spoke to the gopis in this way, his joking words completely captivated their minds. Submerged up to their necks in the cold water, they began to shiver. Thus they addressed him as follows. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives the following example of joking between Krishna and the gopis. I was thinking one thing about reading this, it should really be read by 7 and 8 year olds, because that's how old they were. Krishna was 7 when he lifted Govardhan Hill, and that hasn't happened yet. Radharani is a year younger than Krishna, so we're talking about very young children here. Of course, they were very precocious. Precocious means advanced for their age. So Krishna has a high voice. You just have to superimpose his voice over mine. When he's 7 years old, at least, he has a high voice. When he's older, he has Gambhir eyes, a deep voice. Krishna, O bird-like gopis, if you do not come here, then with these garments caught in the branches, I will make a swing and a hammock. I need to lie down, since I have spent the entire night awake and am now becoming sleepy. Gopis, our dear cowherd boy, your cows, greedy for grass, have gone into a cave. You must quickly go there to herd them back on the proper path. Krishna, come now, my dear cowherd girls. You must quickly go from here to Vraja and perform your household duties. Don't become a disturbance to your parents and other elders. Gopis, our dear Krishna, we will not go home for an entire month, for it is by the order of our parents and other elders that we are executing this vow of fasting, the Katyayani Vrata. Krishna, my dear austere ladies, I too, by the strength of seeing you, have now developed a surprising mood of detachment from family life. I wish to stay here for a month and execute the vow of dwelling in the clouds. And if you show mercy to me, I can come down from here and observe the vow of fasting in your company. The gopis were completely captivated by Krishna's joking words, but out of shyness they submerged themselves in the water up to their necks. Shaking from the cold, they addressed Krishna as follows. Manayam bho kritas tvam tu nanda gopa sutam priyam jani monga braja shlagyam dehi vasam sive pita. The gopis said, dear Krishna, don't be unfair. We know that you are the respectable son of Nanda and that you are honored by everyone in Braja. You are also very dear to us. Please give us back our clothes. We are shivering in the cold water. Shyama sundara te dasya karavama kavoditam dehi vasam siddharmagya. By the way, this is the only place in the 10th canto where the word Shyama Sundar appears. O Shyama Sundar, we are your maidservants and must do whatever you say, but give us back our clothing. We know what the religious principles are, and if you don't give us our clothes, we will have to tell the king. Please. I'm not sure how that please was said exactly. Was it please? Were they angry or were they saying please? Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Bhavatyo Yadime Dasyo Mayoktam Bakarishyata Atragatya Savasangsi Prati chatta shuti smitaha na chenaham pradasyat vipruhu raja karishyati. He Supreme Personality of Godhead said, if you girls are actually my maidservants, and if you will really do what I say, then come here with your innocent smiles and let each girl pick out her clothes. If you don't do what I say, I won't give them back to you. Nah, 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 nah. That's just the way kids talk to each other, isn't it? And even if the king becomes angry, what can he do? Purport. Srila Prabhupada comments, when the gopis saw that Krishna was strong and determined, they had no alternative but to abide by his order. Tato jala shayat sarva darika sita vepita pani bhyam yonim achadya poteru shita karshita. Translation. Then, shivering from the painful cold, all the young girls rose up out of the water, covering their pubic area with their hands. Purport. The gopis had assured Krishna that they were his eternal servants and would do whatever he said, and thus they were now defeated by their own words. If they delayed any longer, they thought, some other man might come along, and this would be unbearable for them. The gopis loved Krishna so much that even in that awkward situation, their attachment to him was increasing more and more, and they were very eager to stay in his company. Thus, they did not even consider drowning themselves in the river because of the embarrassing situation. They concluded that they could do nothing but go forward to their beloved Krishna, putting aside their embarrassment. Thus, the gopis assured each other that there was no alternative and rose up out of the water to meet him. Om Jnana Timirantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. In 1976, Srila Prabhupada was giving lectures in various places in Delhi, including the Delhi Pandal. I happened to be on that tour. There was two busloads of devotees accompanied Prabhupada. He went around and gave lectures in different places. One of those lectures was the day before the actual Delhi Pandal. It was in the residential area somewhere. Someone had set up a pandal and Prabhupada gave a lecture. And after his lecture, Prabhupada spoke on Bhagavad Gita. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you know all these kings. Nor in the future will any of us cease to be. Bhagavad Gita 2.12. So he gave his typical fiery, enthusiastic lecture. One thing I'm realizing more and more as I listen to Srila Prabhupada is how when he speaks, it's not like Prabhupada has to take notes and prepare his lecture, and it just comes gushing out. It just comes gushing out of him. It's just so amazing to listen to it. So much emotion in Prabhupada's speech. And of course, what is he doing? He's glorifying Krishna. He's always just glorifying Krishna. So in this particular lecture, of course, this verse was one that Prabhupada would use all the time. Natvaivaham jatu nasam, never was there a time that I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, to defeat the impersonalists. It's a perfect verse to argue against impersonalism. In fact, I was listening to another lecture at Dr. Mishra's studio. So this was before ISKCON. And Prabhupada spoke on this verse. And when I heard it first, I said, I wonder if Prabhupada has worked his way up and given all these classes in Dr. Mishra's studio. Now he's up to second chapter, verse 12. Then I thought, probably not. Dr. Mishra probably said, you can give class, and Prabhupada chose this verse specifically, because Mishra was a Mayavadi himself. So Prabhupada spoke on that verse. Very wonderful lecture. So here at this time in Delhi, Prabhupada spoke on this verse. And naturally, he's quoting Krishna throughout his lecture, as he always did, citing Krishna as the supreme authority. So after his lecture, there was a question from the audience. I wrote it down. This man says, Swamiji, in our ancient books, Krishna is also represented as a person who lived in a certain period of history, and he was associated with immoral acts. Our books also project him as the Supreme Being, as the perfect one. How do you reconcile the two things? How do we accept that your preaching was based on the assumption that that person who lived at a certain period of time is the perfect one? But how do you fundamentally show that with what he has shown in his character? How do you reconcile these two things? So Srila Prabhupada answered first, he said, that I've been talking about. That I have already explained, this whole what I've been talking about. You have to understand Krishna. That's, he said, this is the solution. You have to understand Krishna. Then this will be reconciled. If you don't understand Krishna, then you will have your doubts. Janma karma chame divyam evam yo veti tatputaha. You have to understand Krishna in truth. So people, they think they know Krishna, but they don't really know Krishna. They don't know Krishna in truth. Now we also have this. In some ways, we know Krishna theoretically. But we know Krishna in truth, in principle, because Srila Prabhupada is teaching us. But it's rare to actually know Krishna in truth or in fact. Another way Prabhupada quoted this word, tatvataha, in fact, not as you imagine him, but as he really is. So then Prabhupada said that to understand this, to know Krishna in truth, is not so easy. It's a very rare thing. Manusyanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kaschin maam veti tatvataha. He said, out of billions of persons, one person will try to understand the truth. And one person, out of billions of persons who are endeavoring for the truth, one will become perfect. That person is called the siddha. So this is not a light thing, to become siddha, to become perfect. Out of billions and billions of people, one will become siddha, perfect. What does perfect mean? It means aham brahmasmi, to realize I am not this body. So even that in itself is a rare achievement. So then you have to go through millions and millions or billions of those persons, and they are trying to understand the ultimate truth, or to understand Krishna, and hardly one of those persons will know Krishna in truth. So it's not a rare thing. Krishna is not so easy to understand, as Prabhupada would say so many times. You may think you have your right conception of who Krishna is, but Krishna is not so easy to understand. But he can be understood. Bhaktyamam abhijanati yavanyas chasmi tatvata tatomam tatvato gyatva visudetaranantaram. Bhagavad Gita 18:55, so Krishna says, how to know him? By bhakti. In that verse, the word tatvata comes up twice. So you know Krishna in truth by bhakti. And what is that? That's also Atah Shri Krishna Namadi Nabhaved Grayam Indriyai. We can't know Krishna some other way. We can't know Krishna by our ordinary mental faculties, our ordinary sensual faculties. Nabhaved Grayam Indriyai. Our senses are too blunt. Such a nice word to Prabhupada, how he translated it. Blunt senses. They can't penetrate. They can't penetrate through the curtain of Maya. They're too blunt. Sevam mukhe jivado swayam eva spuratyada. You have to serve Krishna. And then he reveals himself. It's not that we penetrate the curtain. Krishna opens the curtain. That's how we are able to understand Krishna. Swayam eva spurati adha. He reveals himself. Then Prabhupada told this man, therefore take shelter of bhakti yoga and associate with the devotees if you want to understand Krishna. So this principle of understanding Krishna is so important, because people otherwise cannot understand what's going on here in these pastimes. Even if we look at them, I was thinking that sometimes we all may have seen there are these optical illusions. So sometimes you look at them and you see one particular thing, just like there's one I was thinking of where you have two lines and one is above the other, and the top line has like arrowheads in two pointing in, and the one on the outside has them pointing out, or the other way around. Anyway, if you look at them, it looks like one line is longer than the other, but they're exactly the same length. But because of the way the arrows at the end are pointing, the arrowheads, you can say, or the V's, the way they're pointing, it's an optical illusion. As long as you look at it, you cannot see that they're both the same length. Even though you know in your mind that they're the same length, you just keep looking and looking and looking, and they look like, no, that one looks longer than the other one. So I was thinking that this is also the case for us, because we theoretically know that Krishna is God, but still, at least in a certain way, because we're conditioned souls, these seem like boys and girls doing something together. But it's not that. We have to understand that. Because, well, who is Krishna? He's Param Brahma. He's the Supreme Absolute Truth. Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram, Paramam Bhavan. Arjuna, you just imagine Arjuna, the way he speaks this verse, it's so wonderful, isn't it? Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram, Paramam Bhavan. You can see he's just in ecstasy. Because Krishna has told him, everything, the Absolute Truth, he revealed himself to him. So he's saying, you're the Supreme, I believe it. You're the Supreme Brahman. You're telling me this, you're revealing it to me. Narada has also said it, Vyasa, Devala, Nisita, they've also said it. The next verse he says, Sarvam etam ritadvanye yadmam vadasi keshava. I totally accept everything you have told me. You are the Supreme Absolute Truth. So he's not just some little boy playing with girls. He's the Supreme Brahman. And that, of course, that concept itself, that's hard to understand. Vedanta Sutra begins with the telling us you have to dedicate your life. That's what human life is for, trying to understand Brahman. Now, of course, we're trained right from the beginning. We say that we have to read the Bhagavatam from the beginning so we'll understand who Krishna is. So, of course, before that, we have Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna reveals himself. And we have all so much other Vedic literature. And, of course, the Bhagavatam, the very first verse, Satyam Param Dhimahi, it says, meditate on the Supreme Absolute. That Vasudev is Satyam Param. He's the Supreme Truth. He's the Absolute Truth. Om Purnamada Purnam Idam Purnat Purnam Udachyase Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. In the Isha Upanishad, according to the Vedic scholars, the Upanishads were spoken earlier. Of course, we know that all this literature is eternal. But in the Upanishads, we have this description of the Absolute Truth. So we have to remember, this is Krishna. So this characteristic of Krishna described in Om Purnam, it's such an amazing thing. I always love this understanding of the Absolute Truth. Something we picked up in the Vedic literature that we never heard before. I know I had so many classes in religion because I went to a religious school. I never heard this concept that God, the Absolute Truth, he can reproduce himself unlimitedly and never diminish himself in the least. As Prabhupada said, 1 - 1 = 1. So how amazing that is. And how inconceivable it is. Because what does it mean? It's hard to understand. Well, God is everything. How can he become everything again? Infinite number of times and so on. I was thinking of a nice analogy. Came to me the other day. I don't know, maybe devotees have used this before, but I don't think I've heard it, but I just thought of it. I was thinking when you, in mathematics, you have infinities. Of course, there's a whole branch of mathematics of how to deal with infinities and calculations and so on. But we all have at least some concept of what it means, like an infinite set of numbers. In other words, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and you just keep going and going and going. And we all know that the numbers can keep going and going and going infinitely. So that's one set of numbers, and it's an infinite set. But from that infinite set, you can pull out so many other infinities. You can pull out, in other words, every odd number, that's also infinite. Every even number is an infinite. Every number divisible by 3 is infinite. Every number divisible by 27 is infinite. Every fraction and a fraction of a fraction of a, there's an infinite number of sets that you can pull out, and they're all infinite. So Om Purnamada Purnamidam, this is Krishna. He is infinite, he's everything, he never ends, but he can reproduce himself infinitely. So here he is, a little boy playing with girls, sitting in a tree, talking about sleeping in the clouds, whatever, joking. But this is who he is. Or, I remember the first time I read Bhagavad Gita, and I heard about Mahavishnu. There's one purport, I think it's the beginning of the 9th chapter, maybe, where Prabhupada describes, you know, the age of Brahma and so on. First of all, how that's still beyond our conception. 311 trillion years. A trillion, even the idea of a trillion is beyond our mental capacity. We can't really even imagine what a trillion is. So you know what our national debt is, how many trillion? So many trillions of dollars. I remember reading somewhere, it was something like if you had a trillion pennies, it would stretch from here to the moon and back or something like that. It's just, you know. So a trillion is just way out. Or Brahma's lifetime, it's so far beyond us. It's like some insects live just for a few moments, or germs. They take birth and they die in just a flash. So from their point of view, our life of 100 years, it's inconceivable. So what to speak of Brahma's life, 311 trillion years. So what is that? One breath of Mahavishnu. We take a breath in and out, so many thousands of breaths a day. So one breath of Mahavishnu. And who's Mahavishnu? A portion of a portion of a portion of Krishna. First there's Krishna, then Balaram. Balaram expands as the Chaturvyuha. From that Chaturvyuha expands Mahasankarshan in Vaikuntha. From Mahasankarshan in Vaikuntha expands Mahavishnu. So then, of course, there's Mahavishnu, Garudakshaya Vishnu, Kshirakshaya Vishnu, all of them. So from Mahavishnu comes this universe, which is, of course, not this universe, unlimited number of universes. And he's just a portion of Krishna. I heard a devotee one time describe that for Krishna to create this material world, which for us is beyond comprehension, it takes as much energy as blinking. So, it's nothing. So we have to understand the omnipotence of Krishna, what his position is. Then we can see there's nothing immoral in what he does. First of all, how can we judge him? There's this other whole aspect of it too. Krishna's pastimes, if they appear immoral, well, who's to judge? How can we judge? What is the basis of morality? Of course, this is a debate. We say that there is no question of morality unless you get it from God. Otherwise, you're just speculating. It's like Prabhupada would point out when people, you know, they speculate on such things. So some people think it's immoral to kill animals, and others think it's not immoral to kill animals. So because you have your relative understanding. So we get an absolute understanding of morality from God. And he sets the moral standards for human society. But he's above all of that. He can do whatever he likes. Who's going to judge him? He has the power. He sets the rules. He can make them. He can break them. Morality is a relative understanding, even for us. What we understand is moral. There's one, I remember this Dr. Patel who used to walk with Prabhupada in Bombay, and Prabhupada used to get in all these arguments with him. Sometimes he would go off in a huff. He would get upset with Prabhupada. So in one of these, I remember he was saying he was pushing vegetarianism real strongly. And Prabhupada said, if Krishna told us to eat, if Krishna said, offer me meat, Prabhupada said, we are vegetarians because Krishna says, offer me flour, he says, offer me vegetarian things. If Krishna said, offer me meat, we would give him meat. And he was like, oh, no, Swamiji, no. But that's our standard. What Krishna says, That makes it moral. And of course, another reason why Krishna does these things, in fact, this came up in the Rasa dance. Pariksit Maharaj asked Shukadev Goswami, says, isn't this a little bit of a problem? Krishna's doing is immoral things. People may get the wrong idea. And Pariksit Maharaj, or Shukadev Goswami, says, no, he's doing this because this shows that he's so powerful that no contamination can touch him. Just like the sun, the example is given, the sun can shine anywhere, any impure place, and it purifies that place. So Krishna's activities actually, Krishna's purifies activities that are apparently immoral or sexual, which is, in the material world, it's the worst thing. It's the basis of it's the shackles that keeps us here in this material world. But Krishna's pastimes with the gopis, Vikriditam Rajavadubiridam Chavishno. This verse is spoken at the very end of the Rasa. The chapters on the Rasa Leela, the very last chapter, is called the Rasa Dance. Vikriditam Rajavadubiridam Chavishno. Shradhan Vito Nushrinya Datuvarnayadya. Bhaktim Param Bhagavati Prati Labhya Kamam. Hrid Rogam Ashu Apahinoti Achirena Dhira. It's said there that the gopi, if one listens to these pastimes of Krishna, which appear to be ordinary affairs between boys and girls, with faith, shradhan vito nushrinuyad, anushrinuyad, and with shraddha and hearing from proper authority, you have to have faith in Krishna, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then, bhaktim param, one would become a very advanced devotee, bhagavati, pratilabhya kamam, ridrogam, the kama in your heart, which is ridrogam, which means the disease of the heart, ashu means quickly, apahinoti, achirena dhira. Now this last word, dhira, sometimes it's said that one has to be dhira in hearing them, or it's translated also that one will become dhira. One will become dhira by hearing this, these pastimes of Krishna. Dhira stuttara namuyati. Of course, we want to become dhira because at the time of death, one who is dhira is not disturbed at the time of death. We'll remember Krishna. So there's great power in hearing these things. That's why Srila Prabhupada presented them to us. We have to have faith in Krishna. We have to understand there's no question of Krishna doing anything wrong. And Krishna's presenting these things. Now, of course, generally these leelas of Krishna, they're kept confidential because they're rascals who want to imitate Krishna. But because they're so powerful, they're also presented for human society. So we, of course, can take advantage of them. We don't exclusively hear the most elevated pastimes of Krishna. We have to have full understanding of Krishna, because as I said, we're still conditioned souls. Another lecture I was listening to, it was interesting, it was 1968 in Los Angeles. So was it 68? Oh no, maybe it was a little later. Because I think it was just around the time the Macmillan Gita had just come out. In fact, one of those lectures probably says, now we have our Bhagavad Gita, so study this very carefully. Very carefully. Every day, study this Bhagavad Gita. So it was either in that class or a class just around that time. Someone asked a question after class. I think it may have been before the Gita came out. So we have to realize that in these very, very early days of ISKCON, devotees just didn't have anything to read to learn anything. They were just learning everything from Prabhupada. So this devotee, actually innocently, he asked, actually, I'm not sure where he got this idea. Maybe one of the other books was out. But he said, Prabhupada has said that we, in order to become a gopi, I think maybe was his question, that we have to follow in the footsteps of the gopis. Or we're a resident of Vrindavan, he said. So he said, Prabhupada, you're a resident of Vrindavan, aren't you? So does that mean following you? So Prabhupada said, Becoming a devotee, he says, that you don't have to think about that now. That is for the liberated soul. To worry about things, such things, first you become liberated, and then you worry about such things. When I was hearing Prabhupada's answer, he was actually very patient. I was thinking, if someone had asked that question in 1976, he might have reacted a little more fire, because the devotees were getting into things that, and spreading their thoughts in areas they might, or concentrating in areas they might not have been. But then the devotee was just innocent. He'd heard this. He didn't know, so he was asking Prabhupada. So Prabhupada said, become liberated, and then ask about, you know, who in Vrindavan to follow. So we have to come to the liberated platform to really understand these pastimes of Krishna. Now we have the theoretical understanding to protect us, and we have Prabhupada's guidance. But for it to really sink in, to really understand, and even, of course, from the liberated platform, we may not understand. Many elevated devotees, not everyone, has the insight into Krishna's pastimes. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, like in his Rath Yatra Leela, where he expanded into seven parties, seven persons to dance in the seven kirtan parties. It's said there that not everyone, only the most confidential devotees of the Lord, can understand what was going on there. So these are very elevated topics, but we have access to them, and we're protected by Srila Prabhupada's guidance. And these are there for our purification. That's the amazing thing about them. They seem impure and immoral, but they're actually purifying because they're conducted by the Supreme Absolute Truth. All right, I spoke a little long today, so anybody have any questions or comments? Madan Mohan Prabhu?
I had a comment about judging. I was thinking about that sometimes, and it seems when you judge, you're comparing one thing to another thing, and it's, and if it's higher than this or lower than this, and so there's some...
Is this in the context of some point I made? Or?
Yeah, you said that Krishna's morality is above judgmental. You can't judge
Krishna. Judge Krishna's morality, okay.
So I was thinking that there isn't another like Krishna that you can compare him to because he's unique. So you can't judge Krishna because he's unique. Like when he asked, we'd like to have a son like you, they said there's not another person like me, so I'll have to become your son. So you can't judge Krishna because there's nothing to put him next to. You know,
Of course, Prabhupada would use metaphors to help us understand, just like he used to quote that saying, the king knows no law, or the king is above the law, something like that. So when someone is the transcendental autocrat, in the language of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, then they can do, no one's going to be able to punish them, obviously. Kali Pani, please.
A comment and a question. Does this aphorism from the Bhagavatam, Te Jiya Samnadoshaya, which explains that in the very powerful there is no fault. So that's true even of the powerful people of this world. What to speak of the one who is Adya Hidevanam, the source of all the demigods. And the question is, I think it was in yesterday's purport, it said that the gopis were fully developed, indicating that they're like early teens. Mm. But you were saying that they're under seven.
That's why it's inconceivable.
Awkward question.
I'm looking to see where it said that. But anyway, yeah, I mean, Krishna's, I mean, even just the way he's acting, obviously, he's not acting like a seven-year-old. So they're very young. But I mean that helps us to understand that these pastimes are enacted on a different platform. And these things are so inconceivable to us. For example, somewhere I read recently that for Mother Yashoda, Krishna is always her little boy. It's like no matter how old he is, she always sees him as a little boy. She doesn't really, because that's her wrestle with him. And she treats him that way, and she, even when he's kind of grown up, she still takes him on as her lap and nurses him and so on. And so somehow Krishna is simultaneously Mother Yashoda's little boy and Radharani's lover. And all these different relationships are going on simultaneously. And they also unfold in some kind of time. We don't know how it works exactly. Things happen progressively. One thing happens after another. But we hear that in the spiritual world, not a moment passes. So somehow the gopis were developed. They're only 7 years old. But actually, a graphic example Prabhupada used to say to help us understand how this, what Krishna is doing, is different from what we are doing. He's saying you never hear in Rasa Leela contraceptive method, or you never hear of the gopis getting pregnant. So if you think these are sexual affairs, then no, it's not sexual affairs like we think of sexual affairs. I was thinking of this example of the gold and the iron. So the sexual affairs in this world are like iron, and what Krishna is doing is compared to gold. This example is given in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And I was thinking, yeah, it seems like this is, they're too close, I was thinking. Not to discredit the analogy, but gold is, seems to be too close to iron. Like if you have a bar of gold, say a pound of gold, it's worth maybe $20,000, $25,000 or something, and a pound of iron is worth a few dollars. So there's a big difference, but it's not that much difference when you think about it. But there's a big difference between what goes on in this world between men and women and what goes on between Krishna and the gopis. It's just infinitely, an infinite difference, an ocean of difference between the two. So they were young and somehow they were developed. Of course, what is the point of all this? It's all to satisfy Krishna, for Krishna's relationship with his devotees. I suppose you might say that Krishna was impatient. This is part of the mood of Krishna that we see. He was just a little boy, he wanted to go out and herd the cows, and his mother said, no, you can't go, you're only 3 years old. You know, his pastime, he said, his mother Yashoda said, well, you have to at least wear shoes out there. He said, no, I'm not going to wear shoes unless the cows wear shoes. So anyway, Krishna was, he always wanted to grow up fast, you might say, just as kids do. They want to grow up fast, right? They're in first grade, they can't wait until they're in second grade because the second graders get to do this or that. But he, because he's God, he can do it. He can speed things up. He can go as fast as he wants. So it's all to fulfill the desire of Krishna and his relationship with his devotees.
I've got a question. I mean, this whole thing seems like the sort of ultimate cosmic conundrum. I mean, you could write a whole PhD thesis on this. Has anybody really gone into this in any really great detail? I mean, I'm really sort of still bewildering. I mean, what the whole point of it is, and really, you know, okay, if only 1 in a billion people can understand it, then where are we, you know, where does this leave the rest of us?
I mean, devotees mention, obviously, and Prabhupada did so many times, that this is God's pastime, so you can't misunderstand him. But in general, the etiquette of Vaishnava is that you preach Bhagavad Gita and you don't preach these, you don't talk about Krishna's relationship with the gopis, basically. So it's not the kind of thing that we might want to focus people's attention on. Now maybe, actually, there is a book by Graham Schwag, Garuda Prabhu. He wrote an academic book about the Rasa Leela. So in there, I mean, I'm sure, I've read the book, I've kind of forgotten what's there exactly, but I'm sure he makes it clear who Krishna is, and he gives a lot of insight into these things. So there is some information available. But that's also, you know, it's presented in a very careful, deliberate, sober way. And it's like you have to keep reminding people, this is God we're talking about here. Don't forget that. We can't imitate these things. So we do make that point, but yes, it's vast. The Goswamis have written so much literature about the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, and really one is supposed to be very elevated to enter into these things deeply. Yes, Prabhu.
We shouldn't, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, I think it's Viveka Tattva, he says that we shouldn't try to understand spiritual topics with material logic. Mm-hmm. He said we have a tendency, especially people in the engineering fields, they're dealing with material logic, understanding material matter and things like that. The spiritual logic is out of that paradigm. So that's why it's inconceivable.
Chintya kaluye bhava natang starakina yojaye. Yeah, we can't understand the. That's why we hear from authority. But of course, the analogy is also part of the explanation. Prabhupada would try to help us understand things by giving analogies to things that we know in this world. So there is a sense that we understand, at least theoretically, what's going on. But you're right. In other words, we can't use our mundane judgment and speculation to criticize Krishna, put him under the same kind of analysis we do with some material thing, obviously. Can't do that. That's offensive. Bhakti is that bhakti is required. That's the only way to understand these things. All right, let's stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.